Hi, it's Chris Titley here as part of the FinTech Fun podcast series. I'm joined by Brian Pham, founder of Lightcard. Brian, thanks so much for being part of this series.
Thanks for having me, and morning, Chris.
And Brian, look, you're part of this series because you were the winner of the awards night, or the panel session the other night at the FinTech meetup just before the FinTech Australia Finnies, mate. So congratulations on that. How do you think your pitch went?
Just went up there and gave it my all, and no, I really enjoyed presenting in front of everyone, and it was an honour. So thanks.
Yeah, very, very esteemed judging panel there, which was good. And they took quite a long time to deliberate. It was more than the 6 minutes, so it must have been close, but you came out on top. But you gave us a pitch on Lightcard that night. And for the listeners out there that don't know anything about Lightcard, can you talk about the backstory on how the company was established and how it came about?
Yeah, they did take a long time to judge, but I think it was because it was some really tough competition and some amazing pitches that night as well that were shortlisted. So Lightcard is a company that we've been all working full-time on since March last year. And we found a gap in the market where we asked ourselves, how come you've got boarding passes in your Apple and Google Wallet and some memberships, but not all these other things like IDs, student IDs, access control, and all these other financial products?
Yeah.
And then we dug a little deeper and we found that it was because of all these integrations and approvals that you had to support that were constantly changing. And we found a huge sort of gaping hole in the market globally where a lot of large brands and volume and transactions were involved, and decided to take down the path of creating Lightcard.
Brilliant. No, for sure. And it's funny that like I go to the Gabba and the sporting tickets pop up in the wallet, then you go on a flight, they pop up in a wallet. But there hasn't been sort of more adoption, I suppose, having a physical wallet. I've got all these loyalty cards, I've got all this other stuff in my wallet, but it hasn't really been digitized. And, you know, obviously it's a big market in terms of digitization. What are you mentioned ID. Are you attracting a sort of step-by-step process in terms of that? Or is it sort of, you know, there's just so much going on that you're really trying to run as fast as you can?
So definitely step-by-step, I guess. Like with most startups, we have to work backwards in terms of understanding what the barriers for entry are, in terms of growth and scale. But I definitely think that we have mapped out some barriers to entry into the market, such as, let's just say, a government ID project, various, let's say, approvals and partnerships with an access control provider, POS system providers, and even payment processes. And from there, really understanding like how big the market is in each one of these sectors, and how ready, you know, in terms of timing, Australia is, and then creating a roadmap from there to go across the world.
Yeah, nice, nice. I suppose with the understanding of the market comes with the thoughts of cybersecurity. It comes with like what happens if things get stolen or compromised, etc. And this is from my point of view. I'd imagine that is an issue. What do you think it has been the sort of the biggest roadblock to actually digitization?
Security is a big one, and trust and adoption. And I think as not only our venture, but various industry partners start to go through these cycles of adoption and change, people become more welcome to it. Not every large brand wants to be a leader. They want to be a follower. And definitely security is a big risk. So with all our procurement, especially with larger membership databases or potential membership databases, security is often at the top of our list in terms of presentation and sort of building the relationship. And I think what makes our venture have this advantage is that we're Aussie-based, so we can sort of prove start to finish where the data is stored, how it's handled, and then instill that level of confidence.
Awesome, yeah. Mate. And the initiation of going full-time into this company and getting things off the ground, how have you found it, and what are the challenges that you've come across, and I suppose the progress thus far with Lightcard?
Yeah, awesome question, Chris. So going full time into this venture, I came from a previous software development agency which I chaired for a number of years, almost five, and I was quite used to, I guess, operations day to day within the technology business. So transitioning to full-time into Lightcard was quite natural. And I was lucky enough to build sort of relationships with family offices and investors that understood the vision. And I was able to sort of shape how an early stage investment would sort of grow to the next stages for them. And then along the way as well, just surrounded with really talented advisors, even engineers, co-founders, to help bring the idea into a proof of concept, into a minimum viable product, and then build the relationships from there in terms of technology partners at Apple, Google, Samsung, or even POS system providers.
Yeah, and that integration piece and the partnership piece must be critical, and in terms of the vendors and suppliers that are out there, how have you found navigating that in regards to them, you know, being onboarded with your vision?
I think right place, right time is a really good answer for this. A lot of clients say, Brian, this is a great idea because 2 years into the past during COVID would have been too early. 2 years into the future may have been too late.
Right.
And I think as well as a lot of technology companies like the Apple, Google, Samsung, it's difficult to get a hold of the right people in terms of approvals and then paperwork and then integration. Not because they're such a large moving beast, but because there's a lot of, I guess, you know, layoffs happening and restructures, not only in Australia, but across the world as well. So being able to really, you know, walk into their offices, you know, send them an email, give them a call, and then brainstorm ideas or get these approvals signed off, and then help create the case studies with them, it's a win-win situation. It's a win for the client, it's a win for the technology provider, and it's also a win for us to help, you know, build their vision and increase their user base.
Yep. And in terms of, you know, we're sitting here in mid-2023 in what has been a fairly depressed funding market for technology companies, broadly speaking, in the last 12 to 18 months, with valuations coming down and potential down rounds, etc. How have you gone navigating through that and articulating the Lightcard story to prospective investors?
Yeah, this is really interesting. I see this as both a challenge but also an opportunity, because I feel like now VCs, angel investors, people that are active in the space will only choose something that they really know can work and is delivered properly to them in terms of a deal. So if anything, it's helped us become a lot more sharper in the way that we present, how we present, and obviously the path to market in terms of investment and capital strategy. So it's been different. I guess the way that we really approach this is last 6 months of last year, we definitely warmed up a lot of investors or potential investors and got their feedback and said, you know, if we were to raise capital, what would you be looking for? And then worked backwards from that and continued to polish and polish. And at the moment, you know, we're already over halfway through our raise. So I guess starting greenfield now would be a much more challenging exercise. So we have to count our blessings for sure.
Mm. And then, yeah, putting the hat on for the future of Lightcard and let's repeat this interview in the future, you know, what sort of goals do you have on a short, medium, or long, or is it a 12-month thing, for instance, in terms of where you want the business to be?
Yeah, so in Q1 this year, we did just under 100 grand in revenue. We're looking at a 700K AUD conservative mark towards the end of this year. So we at the milestone of about 1 million ARR, we want to be raising our Series A round in an international market. And the reason why we choose an international market is because we've already got a fairly large ticket client in Asia and negotiating a few more at the moment in the Asian region as well. And just got a lot of good feedback, I guess, with analog systems that we'd be disrupting over there. And the most exciting part is that mobile wallets, since we enable them, they're available in less than a fourth or a quarter of the countries across the world at the moment. So we're able to ride the waves and find, you know, strategic partners, distribution channels, as well as potential projects before they even hit the market.
Just on that point, is that the leverage of, I suppose, you know, an emerging economy that people can afford phones and things, or is it related to the internet? Is it related to anything that you kind of look at?
Just have to be careful in terms of what I say because of the NDAs and everything.
Yep. I mean, as a macro point of view, like a global, like, a, you know, adoption is low-ish, 25%. I mean, well, that grows up over time. You'd imagine that is a sense of people adapting to technology or a newer generation that's understanding what a digital wallet is.
That's a really good point, Chris. And what's interesting about that is, you know, developing countries or even developed countries or underdeveloped countries, you find everyone has a phone in Asia. So it's definitely a mobile-first population. Mm. And with the actual mobile wallet, capabilities
yep.
overseas,
yep.
it's usually following where the banks are approving Apple, Google Pay, Samsung Pay to
transact. There you go. That's probably more to my question about the the approval of that, I suppose. I mean, yes, the banks here in Australia took a while to approve Apple Pay and sort of did it one by one as who's going first, and one jumped and then the rest followed. Yeah.
Great. So the banking systems across the whole world vary a lot, and sort of approvals and legislation required to deploy that technology in different countries varies as well.
Mm. Yep.
So that's why you see a staggered deployment. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and so going back to the question, I'm interrupted, sorry about that, but the question about the future plans of Leichhardt and where you want to see the business and the verticals that you want to play in?
Yeah. So in about a year from now, we're definitely trying to work back towards an Asian deployment and having a head office there.
Yeah.
And the reason being is that, so according to CV Insights, digital wallets is currently a $1 trillion market.
Wow.
And expected in four years to be a $7 trillion market. And the most interesting part about that is actually only 70% are payment transactions.
Right. So okay. So the 30% is other peripheral items, as you mentioned, in terms of onboarding for planes or whatever it might be, loyalty cards, etc.
ID is a big
ID.
One.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So we do service, I guess, a large portion of the digital wallet market. But I think where we create the most impact is around volume, whether it be a gift card at JB Hi-Fi, you know, with over 1 million orders a year, enabling data collection, but also engagement, where, you know, they're already paying 3.5 cents per SMS, US, and we can enable sort of a more personalized push notification that's instant, free of charge, and we get data back from them in terms of engagement. So I think, you know, those sort of projects, as well as the really interesting financial products and sort of ID or secure credentials is something that we have been embedding ourselves in, and I foresee will continue to.
No, for sure. And it's a growing industry. The sort of the offshoots of that come with scams. They come with all these different things, which, you know, can improve in terms of, you know, proving who you are when it comes to voting and things like that. There's lots of different application uses, I'd imagine, that go through your head. But Brian, we're going to switch channels a little bit and talk about you as a person as opposed to the business when you're not thinking about adding capabilities into digital wallets and the technology and talking to partners and the day-to-day operations of running a startup. What's something out there that maybe some people that are listening for the first time and understanding the business don't know about you? What do you do in your spare time?
I actually play table tennis pretty competitively.
Right. Excellent. You're the first person. Look, I've had so many different weird and wonderful activities outside of work. Table tennis is the first.
Well, I love it. It's like a chess, but at a very fast pace. So you sort of get the same feeling if you were driving like 200 kilometers down a freeway. Not that anyone does that. But no, I do. So I try to keep active, sort of switch my brain to a different gear, at least, you know, a few times a week, 2 to 3 hours a session.
Yeah.
And yeah, keep it competitive, participate in tournaments. Carb load before tournaments, sleep different ways.
Really?
You know,
So there's a little competitive streak in you?
Yeah, I'd say that.
and like, you're pretty good, obviously. I mean, do you are there like recognitions of titles that you're that compete for?
A few tournament titles across Australia. Did represent Victoria, I think, 2 years.
There you go. A Victorian
career.
Table tennis player in the flesh. How good is this recording today? was there a state championships, by the way?
There was.
And
so,
how'd you go?
2019, 2021 or 2022. Rough, but definitely enjoy it. And I think the career's just started. And there's a lot more years.
So who won that year? I'd like to know who the national state of championship is.
Victoria won, but it's split into different teams. And then we just had some really amazing players that come from overseas. You know, they study here, or there's sort of like a really healthy life for them coaching here. Starting their own academies and stuff like that. But like some really amazing talent, and yeah, I am keen to put some more hours in the next few years.
Mate, for sure. And look, there's a little event happening in Brisbane in 2032 that you might be aware of that you could probably start planning for. So, look, you know, it's a privilege to podcast you and interview you now, knowing that in 9 years you'll be here in Brisbane representing the country in table tennis. Yeah, is that right?
Mate, I I will do my absolute best. And I think, Chris, it's time that you change the podcast to the sports one.
Yes, that's right. Well, actually, sport and fintech, I'd love to do that. That'd be amazing. But I could talk all day about that. But, Brian, thank you so much for giving the listeners out there an understanding of the background of Lightcard, the progress that you have achieved thus far, the future plans, and also your future plans as a professional table tennis player. Really like to, you know, well done the other day on the pitch night at the fintech meetup, and then also at the Finneys, etc. It was a big week in Melbourne for everyone to collaborate and network, etc. Thanks to Fintech Australia, and really look forward to catching up.
Awesome. Likewise, Chris. Thanks for having me.